I know. The
Sorry about that.
February 8th, that's right. February 8th meeting of Ways and Means to Order. And I have a motion to approve the minutes of December 7th and December 21st regular and special meetings. Mr. Walter, second.
I'll second it.
Second, thank you. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. I'd like to take some of the resolutions out of order here. So if we could go to resolution 95 first. Is Johanna on here? And
yes. Hi, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm waiting for Dr. Smith and Haley Carr from our medical examiner's office to jump on. I just gave them the meeting ID.
Okay, then we can go with actually the second one I want to take out of order was for the sheriff. Are you ready, Sheriff Figueroa, to present? Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, then we'll turn it over to you for presentation.
Good evening, everyone. And I'm calling you from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., as I'm at the National Sheriff's Conference. And I brought a couple of folks from Axon regarding the resolution with the Axon cameras. And I want to talk about the cameras that we have now. In 2018, they started to start this contract with Panasonic. 2019 in March is when the resolution was submitted and the cameras were bought. Since then, so many different things have occurred in law enforcement. Number one was the discovery law that came out in April of 2019. And then, of course, the death of George Floyd in 2020, and the governor's executive order 203. The present cameras that we have now have reached their 3-year warranty. We've been having some issues with them. And so the importance of this Axon product is there's multiple reasons, but the main ones are obviously transparency and what people expect law enforcement to do when it comes to that transparency. What's great about this product is that if a weapon is removed from a holster or a taser is removed, the cameras automatically go on. And that could be any agency. So if the state police has Axon, the city of Kingston Police Department is going to get Axon. So if any one of those officers pull their weapons out of their holster or their holders, then the cameras automatically go on if they're within 30 feet. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I know Jim Bortour is busy, and I'm going to turn it over to Jim real quick, and then Jesse Lowe. So, Jim? You're on mute, Jim.
Okay, now can you hear me?
I can.
All right. Good seeing you, Sheriff. Last couple of days, I'm back home now. So, thank you to everybody that's on the call. There's a lot of people on the call. Some might be involved with this, some may not, but Sheriff Figueroa, I think, has done an excellent job putting together a nice package for the county. I've been with Axon for a couple of years and served as a sheriff in Niagara County for 11 years prior than that. Was an Axon customer for the entire time I was sheriff. And he's right, with the George Floyd incident, the Executive Order 203, everything that's going on in this world, he's put together a nice package with the cameras, updating what he has with the Panasonics. And I think it's a great investment for Ulster County. You know, cameras do two things. The main thing they do is capture truth. And in law enforcement, it's all about truth. And the second part of that is sometimes the truth hurts the police and sometimes it helps the police. But the fact is having those cameras does, in fact, transmit the truth. And as we know, just like fingerprints long ago and DNA in the last 25 years, that the public and juries expect to see video now. They expect video on everything. And I think he's done a fantastic job. What this is going to allow him to do is equip his officers, make sure the cameras are on when they need to be on, and then seamlessly transition evidence that's collected to the district attorney.
Thank you, Jim. Mm-hmm. Hey, Jesse, if you can talk a little bit about the product.
Absolutely. So good evening, everyone. My name is Jesse Lowe. I'm the account manager for the county here at Axon on both the Taser and Body Camera software side. So the contract that we've written up includes 62 body cameras for 60 users. So that includes two spares on site at all times. Part of that is also our TAP program, our technology of search program, where we guarantee that we will replace any broken camera, no questions asked, within the 5 years of the contract. Run over, damage, stops working, has battery issues, they'll use one of the spares we have on site, send that one back to us, and we'll send them a brand new camera as quick as we can. Also, as part of that TAP program, there's a camera refresh, both at the 2.5-year mark and the 5-year mark. So they always have the latest technology and newer cameras as well. That also helps with the batteries lasting the entire shift, because as we all know, with cell phones, you know, 5-year-old cell phone battery is nothing like a brand new cell phone battery. We want these cameras to be on for that entire shift. Contract also includes unlimited storage for the entire 5 years. So there's no tiered options where the sheriff would have to come back in a year and say, hey, we ended up doing a lot more video than we expected. Need to ask you for more money, for more storage. All the storage is cloud-based, and it's automatic. When the deputy removes the camera and puts it into the dock, it automatically uploads into our cloud, which is a secure audited cloud that's in Microsoft Azure's GovCloud. And I'll pause real quick there for any questions before I go over a couple other items that are included.
Hey, Jess, don't forget to talk about evidence.com.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any questions?
If nobody else on the committee has any questions right now, I do have just one related to what you said. So there's no additional cost for storage. Are there any other potential costs that we would see as a result of the switch?
Adding additional users. So this contract includes the license for 60 users, 60 cameras to have to be on the refresh program, all the docks, all the cables, all the body camera mounts. So the only time you'd see additional charges is if the sheriff's office adds additional users or wants to add additional softwares, you know, something new we come out with or something we have today that they're not interested at this time.
Hey, Walter?
Yeah, relatedly, because one of the benefits of this is supposed to streamline discovery and getting the information from law enforcement to the DA's office, are there some costs we're going to see down the line from the DA's office in order for that office to process this information?
So there are not. When a case is built in evidence.com, which is our cloud-based evidence storage, the sheriff or anyone who has the proper permissions at the agency can simply share out that video to the prosecutor's office, and that's a separate copy of that video will then be created in our cloud within the sheriff's unlimited account for the prosecutor's office to view. Now, we do have a prosecutor product that can do additional features on top of that, but as far as just getting them a copy of the case and all the evidence within that case, there are no additional charges. Any other questions? Just a couple other things in the contract I'll point out. If not, one is our performance software. So that software is our basically body camera usage tracking software that hooks up to the Sheriff's Dispatch Center, where it accounts for the number of calls the deputy was sent to versus the number of videos they have to ensure their camera is on during all calls it should be. It also ensures that the videos are tagged properly and categorized properly so they're kept for the right amount of time. And this will send reports automatically to command staff if deputies are not properly tagging their videos as they should, so they're not lost. For example, they might keep a traffic stop that was a warning for 1 year, but something with an arrest that was 3 years. So we want to make sure the deputies are going in there and tagging those videos properly. So our performance software automates that, and it also has the option to be a randomized video review software where supervisors can go in and it will take a random video and make sure that they review it however the policy is set. It's very customizable, so they're watching those videos however often they want to make sure they're checking in on their officers and make sure they're doing the right things out there.
Just like your hand up for a second, but before we do that, since we're going to start having questions discussion, this is resolution 53, so just kind of get a motion for establishing capital project 616 for the Axon body cameras. Second?
I'll second.
Legislator Kale. All right. Legislator Kale. All those in favor?
Aye.
Oh, you want to have to wait?
No, I have a question about this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So my question is, how are the videos uploaded, and how frequently are they done? Through cellular service? Are they after the shift dock mounted both? And is there any storage on these cameras in case, like, Ulster County is very rural, and I'm sure you deal with that a lot, where there's no cell service. So how do you deal with that?
Absolutely. So there are three options to get the video off the camera. The one is in the charging dock at the end of the shift. So they'll go back to the station, back to wherever they keep the docks. They'll take the camera off their uniform, put it in the dock. In the dock, it will offload those videos via the Ethernet cable at the station. It will charge the camera, and then also if there's any sort of software update or firmware update, it will update that camera while it's charging between shifts. It also has the ability to use Wi-Fi to offload the videos. So if they're at a substation or somewhere where there's Wi-Fi, it will automatically offload the videos if they'd like. And then the third option, which is included in this contract, is our critical incident offload, where from the body camera, if they are within somewhere where there is cell service, they can offload the video directly to evidence.com from the body camera itself. So if there's an incident, example, I had an agency where an officer wearing one of our body cameras had his foot run over and the person drove off. So from the scene, supervisor took his camera, uploaded that footage directly to evidence.com, and they had a perfect picture of this guy's face to put on the media to try and get him ID'd. And they didn't have to go back to the station, wait for all the other 20 videos to upload, and then get it out. They had that video and that screenshot online, I think, within an hour.
And what are the capacity of the cameras?
I want to say it's at least 12 hours of video.
No, I'm sorry, storage-wise, as far as how much video in gigabytes, I'll say, on the cameras for storage.
Let me look that up real quick. I don't know the exact size, but I know it's at least a full shift. I mean, we've got agencies that sometimes work 16-hour shifts. So let me find that out for you. One second.
No, I'm good. I'm fine. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All right. Well, Brian, your question actually sparked a question for me then. So related to time, you're saying 12 hours. What's the resolution of these cameras?
They can be set between 420 and 1080p.
Okay, because at 1080p at 12 hours, you're probably talking over a terabyte of storage. That's a lot. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the video's not going to be on the camera's not going to be on the entire time. It's only when there's interactions with the public.
Is there more that you have to present, or are we?
That's it. Sorry, I was seeing if there any other questions. I don't believe there's anything else. I'm just looking over the contract. Nothing else, Sheriff. Anything else you wanted me to speak to?
No, I think we're good for the purposes of the Axon resolution, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Gavaris. My question is possibly for the sheriff, or possibly for other legislators who are not as new as I am, and I apologize, I haven't had a chance to review the Public Safety Committee meeting yet, but do our usage of the cameras, is that governed by state law at this point, county law, or is Sheriff's Department policy, or some combination?
It's Sheriff's Office policy, but DCJS also has a policy that guides us. But it's the Sheriff's Office policy.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much for both of you for the presentation. Sheriff, thank you for setting this up. I do have a question, but I don't think you're going to be able to answer tonight. It's not that urgent. But so the cellular part, I would imagine that would incur an additional cost if we were to use that option for uploading.
It would not. So that is included in this contract. We cover the LTE chips in each of the cameras.
Oh.
So on the contract, there is it's called the Respond Device Plus. The other feature I did not discuss, and my apologies for missing this, is the ability to live stream from these cameras. So supervisors or the sheriff can either from evidence.com or the app on their phone. They can see where the cameras are using GPS and also live stream into them during critical incidents.
Prepare for me to never sleep after this. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you all. Appreciate it.
All right. Hey, Jim, Jesse, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. All right. Do everybody know one more questions? Then all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Votes unanimous. Thank you. Johanna, you're all set then?
Hi, Chair Gavaris. I'm so sorry. We had a mix-up with the timing, the schedule. Really appreciate you being willing to take it out of order, but can we give Dr. Smith another 10 minutes or so to jump okay. on?
We'll just go Thanks. Into the regular agenda then. Thank you.
Okay. We actually have one number I'd like to grab. Sure. 845-389-7309. Can you please state your name for the record? Star 6 to unmute.
Hi, Star 6.
Oh, you're unmuted. We can hear you.
Now she needs to star 6 to unmute.
It's Cheryl Snyder.
Thank you.
Resolution 17, setting a public hearing, proposed local law number 3 of 2022. Local law amending local law number 6 of 2021. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second.
I'll second it.
Second, Fabiano. Discussion? All right. Paul, is it Mr. Rock?
Thanks. I used to be in favor of all public hearings, but far too many times in the past, it had been assumed that once somebody votes for a public hearing, they support the law. I'm not necessarily supportive of this law, so I'll be voting no tonight, to set the public hearing for that reason.
Okay.
Yeah, so I haven't had an opportunity to actually do 100% of the research on this, but so this would raise the minimum wage that the county pays contractors and their employees to $20 an hour. Is that right? Something like that? Yeah, go ahead.
Legislator Malone.
Yeah, no, it's just DSS contracts.
Just DSS contracts.
More or less very skeptical of wide-ranging government over private sector raising the minimum wage. I think there's repercussions to that that end up hurting even the people we think we're helping. This is just specific contracts where we literally have people that are working for not-for-profits being contracted by the county that are actually both basically working full-time for the county and also going to DSS for help themselves at $15 an hour. Some of these individuals have impressive college degrees. And I just felt like as we are contracting, and a lot of times it's out of sight, out of mind, we will go and contract with the not-for-profit because, and we don't want to do it in-house because if we did it in-house, we'd have to pay a living wage. I think if you're working with our elderly, if you're working with our troubled youth, if you're working for the people in this county that are in real need, you should be making, I think, $20 an hour is acceptable. This is only going to affect a couple of people inside each of these not-for-profits depending on the contract. So I'm surprised that anybody would be okay having their grandmother, their nephew being worked with. To be honest with you, we're sitting here in New York and Ulster County. I don't, and if they're on services already, let's empower these people and get them off services. How could they be essentially working full time for the county, lesser health care than our county employees are making? Sometimes we have contracts that we basically have people in-house doing the same thing. And we're contracting, having people do essentially the same thing. And to pay them $15 an hour, I think, is unacceptable. And at times, maybe we'd have to make the decision if these not-for-profits come back to us and say, oh, well, we can't do it then if we're going to have to pay $20 an hour. Then maybe we should be doing it in-house. But I don't think it's a big ask. And I'd be surprised if any of these not-for-profits come with legitimate, real legitimate setbacks to paying a couple of employees $20 an hour.
Okay. Legislator Cahill, then Rock.
Thank you. So I feel a little snake bit. We just passed last year increasing our contractors to $15 an hour, and we have seen some substantial increases in some of those contracts in the last few months. We're still waiting for explanations on those. And I'm a little uncomfortable that we don't know what the actual financial impact of this would be and how many actual employees would be affected. And you know, do we actually know all of them? In other words, do we have a definitive number of employees who would be impacted by this so we would have a definitive number that we're looking at? Because like I said, we approved this last year and we have been doing nothing but seeing resolutions coming in from some of our contractors that are in some cases asking for 250% of what the initial contract was.
Are we asking them for backup for that?
Yeah, we are. But I just wanted to bring that up about this particular public hearing on this. I just think I would rather wait and get a little bit more information before we even schedule a public hearing, quite honestly. That's my opinion.
Thank you. Larry Rock.
Thanks. My biggest concern about passing this is the fact that we don't know how much it's going to cost. When we went to the $15, kind of what Legislator Cahill just said, you know, when we went to the $15 an hour for contractors, we were told by the sponsor of that resolution that it really wasn't going to cost that much money. And then, you know, as Legislator Cahill said, we just had increases in costs from our contractors, this past, December, that we had to amend the contracts. So, I'm not saying I'm against it. I'm not saying it's the wrong idea per se, but what I'm saying is we should know how much it's going to cost the taxpayer or have some sort of an idea of how much it's going to cost the taxpayer before we make that policy choice, in my opinion.
Any other comments? I will echo, though, what Legislator Cahill and Ronka just said. The same thing is, you know, it's hard to have a public hearing when we don't have all the information for the public for them to be able to comment. The conversation might be very different if they know the potential financial implications that this would have, and we did see that with the recent one. So, Legislator Maloney, and then you're on mute, Legislator.
I'll just point out that you're talking about apples and oranges. I think we don't have contracts with not-for-profits that look, I mean, if you're a multi-million dollar capital project, you're talking about the number of employees and the length of that contract. I'm surprised. I wasn't here last term, but had I been, I would have been asking for these contractors that were coming back to us justifying major. I hope you guys can you provide that to me? I mean, it looks like you have all the information. Can you provide me with their backup to how paying somebody $15 an hour ended up costing them? I mean, we were entering into contracts with what, a majority of their workers making $12 or $13 an hour? For it to get to the point where it was hundreds of thousands of dollars, what does that math even mean? And are you sitting here telling me that we want to continue to do contracts with, you know, usually it's an economic driver when we do a contract that come on. That was one of the positive things to these big contracts that we're employing people. You're telling me we're the mass majority of these people that we're employing are making $12 and $13 an hour. So everybody we're contracting with is on is getting subsidies for everything in their life. I'm not really sure what you guys are even talking about. What are you asking me for? I mean, if we go out for bid or for a quote, I mean, we could put in there, what would the price of the contract be if you're paying at least $20 an hour through DSS? And what would it be if you were allowed to pay 15? You could get your answer that way. I mean, I don't know what you want me to tell you. It's going to be minimal. Look at some of these contracts that we've been passing at all day long every day with Family of Woodstock. Overstating what $5 an hour for these limited DSS contracts is going to be. And the other thing, if it's that much money, we're going to save it on the other end because we are being told literally by some of these people that are experiencing this. I work full time for the county and I'm getting services. So we're spending the money one way or another. Shouldn't we just empower them, get them off of services and pay them for a job well done?
The answer is we don't have those information. That's on some of the agenda items tonight is where those are questions outstanding for those kind of things. There were increases that came in resolutions that were before Ways and Means tonight as well. So this is a result of what happened last year. We're now seeing the impact. That's the point. We don't have the answers yet. Somebody had their hand up and I apologize, I lost it.
It was me. I just, with all due respect to Legislator Maloney, and I don't think anybody, disagrees with your motives. And I also don't think that it's the motive of anybody in the body to keep somebody on services or to not have, you know, a living wage paid. I just, you know, from my perspective, I would like to have some of the knowledge of how much it's going to cost before we make the decision instead of finding out afterwards. That's, you know, your opinion of minimal might be different than mine, might be different than Legislator Walters or Legislator Nolan. I'm just going off of what's on my screen right in front of me. But, you know, just in no particular order and for no particular reason, you know, I just, everybody's opinion of minimal or substantial are different.
Legislator Petit and then Deputy Executive Ryder.
Thank you. You have two resolutions in front of you tonight that were passed, I believe, in Health and Human Services, and they're about $150,000 each. We were told $60,000 of that was due to pay increases. If you're looking at the employees at one time being paid minimum wage to bring it up to $15 an hour, that means they would have to have at least 30 employees handling each program. Now, one of the programs only had a minimum of 9 individuals that they were assisting. So, you know, I have similar concerns if we're going to be passing these resolutions, where is the backup? Now, we were also told that some of it was compression, salary compression. But, I mean, we're looking at people living in Ulster County who want to work in Ulster County who need at least $20 an hour to live in Ulster County. And even then, that's not totally sustainable wages. The price of living is through the roof. So, you know, I think it's important that we increase it for especially those involved with human services because many of them are required to have a bachelor degree. And if we're not going to be passing this, perhaps we want to hold up all of these other resolutions until we do get an answer as to why they're increasing them so substantially. You know, are we paying for all of the upper management too? Or are we just paying for the caseworkers who are going to be assisting individuals in need?
Deputy Executive Ryder.
Yeah, I just want to clarify that you will see, and I've said this in other committees, but you will see many resolutions that are for contract amendments that talk about the living wage requirement that is just adding in the paragraph to the contract for the living wage requirement. It does not mean that they are increasing salaries or pay in those contract amendments due to the living wage. We are required now, the purchasing department, moving forward, to include this paragraph in every contract and every amendment. So you're going to see a line that says the amendment does this and that it's the living wage requirement. It doesn't mean we're increasing the cost. We could be adding the second year or the first extension. Doesn't mean we're increasing pay due to this living wage requirement. The only contract amendment that I'm aware of that has been affected by the living wage requirement so far was the family of Woodstock, and it's the budget amendment that we did at the end of last year, sponsored by Legislator Uchitel, and that was what family of Woodstock said was needed to get all of their employees up to that $15 an hour and increase county support for the outreach centers in Woodstock, Ellenville, and New Paltz. So that entire budget amendment wasn't just due to the living wage. It was also increasing county support for those outreach centers. We've provided that information. I know Joanna has provided other information. I am not aware of any other contract amendment due to the living wage requirement. We did do an analysis on the last local law that was passed, reaching out to the nonprofits that we work with. And it was about $1 million, I think, was somewhere around there for the original living wage that the finance department, I believe, did a budget analysis on.
Legislator Maloney.
No, just thank you for that clarity. I just
was told by,
I believe, three different legislators that they had been seeing all these raises to contracts, and then Deputy Executive Ryder comes in and says, no, that's not what that means. All right, I think it's fairly doable to figure out by employee, by hours, if they're at 15 now and they go to 20, you could easily look at a contract, figure out the number of employees, figure it's between 5 and 10 a year, and kind of come up with that. And then you can make that decision like some of us have, that we can live with that added cost, because we're getting that added cost one way or another. But thank you for that clarity.
Any other discussion? All right, all those in favor? Sorry, people have moved around on my screen somehow. Brian.
Yeah, Chairman Gavars, can I make a motion to take no action on this until we get a little bit more background for a month, if Legislator Maloney doesn't have an objection, to give us an opportunity to get some more information as to the number of employees that will be impacted and the actual financial impact? Because despite what Deputy Executive Ryder said, we absolutely have resolutions in front of us that are increasing fees that look like they're related to that. And we were waiting for the explanation for that tonight. So anyway.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. I believe the proper motion would be a motion to postpone. There wouldn't be a motion to take no action. You just wouldn't take action. So I would second a motion to postpone.
Are you postponing to next meeting or to next month? I said Kale.
That would depend on when we get the information. I will say next meeting, and then if we don't have it there, then I will recommend that we postpone it another month. Yeah.
All right,
I second that motion.
All right. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
All right. Thank you. Resolution 22, confirming the appointment of Sharon Williams as Director of Employment and Training. Kind of motion.
So moved.
Walter, second. Brock, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
So carried. Number 23, confirming the appointment of Nick Vazda as Director of Environment. Motion. Legislator Walter, second.
Yeah, second. I'll second it.
Second. Fabiano, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Number 25, confirm the reappointment of Michael Iaposi as Commissioner of Social Services. Can I motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Walter, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 26, establishing fair pay and salary equity policy requiring salary compensation study prior to 2023. Can I motion?
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. Walter, discussion. Commissioner Rock.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to a salary study. It's my understanding that the executive's office was in the process of one. I've been talking about a salary study for quite some time, I think since Legislator Maloney was with us last. And, I think that folks are going to be surprised by what it says on both ends.
Okay. Mr.
Legislator Maloney can go first if he wants to give some other backup or information related to this resolution. Or
no, Legislator Walter, go ahead. I'll wait.
I guess for me also, if it's going to be establishing, on one hand, we could just do it. The executive's office could just do it. I feel like if we're going to establish a policy, then we should be clear about who we want to have do it. It's a little vague in the resolution that it might be done by this person or that group or that group. And, it's a small little nitpick, but I think if it's going to be an actual policy and we wanted it done, we would want some clarity as to who was going to do it.
Chair Maloney? Legislator Maloney?
Yeah, no, put in there specifically for that reason, as you just said. We could do it anyway, and that's kind of what is in there. It's got to be done. It gives us some parameters. It can be done in-house. We can go out for a study. We could spend money to go out and have it done. I think it can be done in-house. We can talk to anybody we'd like inside the county as far as countywide elected. We could do it through our own budget analysts I'd love to see a team, but there are some specifics that we want to compare. I think we're going to get a feel. This is a tool. You'll be approving the PBA contract, I think, today. every union contract, every hire. At the end of the year, our biggest argument every year in this committee are management raises. We never really have anything to really look to, and we were supposed to get it done for years. All this does is it puts us on the clock, and it makes sure we don't go more than, I believe, 4 years without ever having a salary study, something that doesn't have to cost us money that we can use. We can use it with our own staff. We had arguments when we were trying to add staff to our own budget. It's constantly an argument. And it shouldn't be. We should know where we're at. This is just as much about the unions and what they're making and what we're paying. This is going to be a tool that we use during every union negotiation. And it's just the only justification that I've heard when I talk to legislators on the side for maybe not wanting to do this is not wanting to know how underpaid certain members of our county are, because we would then kind of be liable for it at that point, if you want to say that. And I just don't know, if something's not going to cost us money, it's just going to put us on the clock and mandate that we do something that we should be doing every couple of years.
Anybody else? All those in favor?
Sorry, Legislator Guevara's, Legislator Petit's hand was up.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, you know, when there's a civil service test, they clearly post what the salary is. And it would certainly simplify staff in each department if there's an equalization of pay for this basically the same jobs being performed, whether it's a secretarial, clerical, or other. And we won't know if there's any disparaging differences unless we do a study on it. And as Legislator Maloney said, we could either do it in-house or we could hire an outside firm. But we did try to do this many years ago, and it wasn't followed through on, and it would just really simplify the budget process when certain job positions are being asked to have a salary increase, and we don't know what that's going to do as far as the other departments go, which they could very well come the next year and they'll be asking for an increase as well. It just seems to make sense.
Legislator Walter.
Thank you. I want to reiterate my point of not being against this in concept, but feeling like the language of it could be the comptroller, it could be our office, it could be the executive's office, makes it a policy that, you know, then each group can point to the other group and it doesn't get done. I would feel much more comfortable if this resolution specifically says, requests that we either hire an outside organization to do it, whether we put it on the comptroller specifically, but I don't feel like setting a policy that one of three potential groups can do it is going to achieve the outcome that you're hoping for. So with what my request is for me to support it is that it has a little bit more clarity as to who would be performing this.
Executive Ryder.
Just on that point, I will say that this year there will be a study done by the personnel department in consultation with budget and finance, and you know, happy to have that study done that way moving forward as well, whether it's every 4 years. No issues with the policy. I just hope that there remains a flexibility that we can do it in-house, and you know, if it makes sense for one individual kind of department to own it, I think it would make sense for the personnel department to own, whether it's a contract out or doing it in-house.
Thank you, Legislator Maloney.
I'm not sure that personnel study, I'd be surprised if it was going to be hitting on all the points that this is mandating. I hope it is, and that would be fine. To Legislator Walter's point, it's very specific, this resolution, as how there is a process. It goes through a committee, and it's up to that committee. This is empowering a standing committee. The committee decides how to do the study. It's very similar to how the audit committee chooses our the budget analysts or how Ways and Means, I believe, maybe I'm crossing them up, chooses our end of the year audit. It's the same exact process. It's all there. It's not, you know, we're not flipping coins. It's in the resolution. It speaks to exactly what you're talking about. And it just mandates we do it every 4 years. And it has the parameters to make sure that we are not just comparing inside the county, which we do. Should we have the same position in one department making $20,000 more than another department? Should we have all these deputies making let's have those conversations. And we will. We'll have all that information. Also, we're looking to the private sector and we're looking to other counties. Our RCO, what are RCOs making compared to? It even mandates that we take a look at other counties, and at least one of those counties needs to be to the south of us, because we know as we get further from New York City, there's you're making a little less, and we'll take that into account. And one of the counties that we compare to must be from the north part of the county. Everything is answered. You can amend anything you'd like, but I don't really believe there's much to amend. It basically is just mandating that a certain committee goes ahead and decides, without going over that four-year mark, how to do it, and the parameters are there to make sure that we're getting really good comparisons for every single employee of this county, both in the private sector and the public sector, outside the county and inside the county to ourselves. We've never done it since the charter, and we've talked about it every single term. This puts us on the clock with a good parameter and a good process, and it gives us the leeway for that committee to decide with everyone else's input. The executives people are at every meeting. We have multiple legislators that aren't even on committees, like myself and Laura, at these different committee meetings. Everybody's got a seat at the table. We're on the clock. We decide who's going to do it that year, and then we have it. I really think this just makes a lot of sense.
Listen, well, just make sure you take down your hand whenever you're done, because otherwise it messes up my screen there. Thank you. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
One.
All right. Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Opposed? Three. Okay. Oh, four. All right. Motion's carried. 27, eliminating the manager positions by the 2022 budget. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. Legislator Walter, discussion. Legislator Runk.
You know, if I didn't have the level of respect that I have for the person that was hired for this position and know that he's going to be a serious help to the finance department, I would be supporting this. But because the position was filled again, you know, before we were able to take action as a legislature, I can't support it tonight.
Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, I put this. Me and Ken had talked about this and put this in, and then I believe that it was pretty quickly. I think the resolution was kind of out there, and I don't know if that was strategic on the executive's part, because up until a couple days ago, this individual wasn't even in the financial system. I've heard wonderful things about him. I like that. I don't think you choose whether or not you approve of a position by who's going to get it necessarily. I understand where Legislator Ronk's coming from. I still stand by putting up legislation like this. I'll remind everyone, we just postponed giving people $20 an hour. Now we're about to pay $114,000. Going back to the Ways and Means meeting where this was decided to give this raise just a month or two ago, there was a large discussion. I think Legislator Ronk led it, and it was basically brought out that, yeah, the reason we're going this high with this position is because it was for, I believe, Chris Kelly. Now it's not Chris Kelly anymore, but we leave it at 114. I also did all the background just so we have, I think, every time we go and make decisions, especially about management and somebody making over $100,000 a year, especially with a new position, as we're defunding one and creating another, that we should take a look at it like this. This is healthy. This is what we're supposed to do. Is everybody okay to go to 114, especially when that 114 was justified by having a certain person there? Do we really need that? Take a look at how this position came about. I'm not on Ways and Means. But I still think that this is diligence, and we should be doing it. Me personally, I think we, you know, I'm happy we're getting this. We might be getting this compression study because I think we do need to take a look logistically at what we've done. We've created a lot of management positions over the past couple of years, and I'm not sure, you know, we really have a great idea whether it's working the way it should be and whether we're getting all we can out of these positions. Another question is, looks like this position would be something that I'd like to see a certified accountant, a CPA. Is this person we're hiring giving $114,000? Do they have an accounting degree? I don't know. Anybody answer me that? Mark?
I can't confirm that. I'm not sure if Ken has a CPA or not.
It's a budgetary position that we're paying $114,000.
Well, I have a scholarship. Let's say Walter.
Thank you. I'm not answering that question either. I don't know this person's degrees. I'll say, you know, I appreciate the intent behind this. I will say that I was very concerned about these changes in the budgetary time, but in the end, I supported it. And I didn't support it specifically because Chris Kelly would be in it, but because promises were made by finance that we were going to see a whole higher level of the budgeting approach, a more transparent, more goal-oriented approach that we've been asking for many years. Now, granted, at the time I even said, you know, I didn't quite see why we hadn't gotten there in all those years, but I'm going to trust that this is true and that we're going to see a budget like we've never seen before. And if we don't, then when it comes to the next, for the 2023 budget period, then I'd be very open to making these kinds of changes. But at this point, I ultimately voted yes because I believed that finance was really going to deliver on something we will be so amazed by and will be so useful to all of us. And I hope that's true. And so at this point, I'm going to just have to wait this year out and say, I'll be 100% supporting you on removing these positions in 2023 if we're not seeing some substantial impact of having them.
Thank you. Comptroller Gallagher, then Kale, then Ruck.
I'm not going to speak to the motion, but our new Director of Internal Audit and Control is trying to get back in the meeting for the last few minutes, and he has a CPA, hoping to introduce him shortly, but if you could let him in the meeting, I'd appreciate
He's in.
That.
Thing. He's in.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Kale.
Thank you. So here's my issue, and I argued this last term in the opposite direction of adding positions or altering positions outside of the budget. I'm a firm believer of addressing budgetary items during the budget cycle, especially positions, because that's when they should be justified and that's when we should have all the cards on the table and we're approving a budget as is. And so to just vote on a budget a few months ago and then come back and then vote against something that we just voted for, it's not something I'm real comfortable with. I don't like adding or removing positions after the budget is voted on. And that's just something that I'm going to be sticking with my entire term, and I'll be sticking with it tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks. I share a number of Legislator Maloney's concerns. It's why I proposed eliminating this from the executive's proposed budget in the first place, and it actually caused what I feel is a pretty big rift between myself and the executive over that and several other, you know, honest disagreements and conversations that I had, both, you know, publicly and privately. I value Ken Juris working for the county so much that I would, it's really hard for me to vote yes on this because of that. It's one of the few times when, because of the caliber of person that we're getting for the dollar that we're spending, I think it's a good use of resources. Legislator Walter's point, you know, I somewhat agree with and somewhat don't, because, you know, trust is one thing, but I'm a trust but verify kind of person. And with a lot of these management positions that have been given large salary increases and or new positions that have been created, the verification hasn't been there. So I struggle to have the trust. But with this individual, because of the individual alone, I just can't support the resolution.
Thank you. Comptroller Gallagher, I think your hand is still up from before. If you could just lower it. Yeah, please lower it down. Legislator Maloney.
A couple of points. One to Legislator Cahill, which usually I'd agree with that, though this position was just justified. We were just told by the executive, like days ago, basically, that this was for a certain person that was immediately moved out of the position. That's how we justified keeping it. That's how we justified the pay. So it's not as if this position has been in the county in this way year after year, cycle after cycle, and then all of a sudden we're going to do something outside the budget process. No, it was actually kind of done outside the budget process. Looks to me like we were told that this person was in this, they justified this big raise for this person, then immediately moved the person out, and then we're going to keep the salary. Once again, I don't know if we've looked up whether this is a CPA or, you know, or what, but maybe moving it down to 97,000 where it was in 2020. Like I said, the reason it went to 114 was because of this impressive person with, I think, a much more budgetary background and a resume that justified 114. Do we want to take a look at that? We often, you know, we can, you know, we can talk in ways about not wanting to go from 15 to 20, but let's have that same tough budgetary salary conversation about this right here. Perhaps going back down to 97 would be a suggestion. And if we're going to get more, I'll remind you, I was here a term before this last, and I heard all these same promises back then. I still don't see much in the budget. Hopefully they can go back and change. Last time I looked at the budget, I'd tell everyone to look at Orange County's budget. I like what they're doing over there much more than what we have. And right now, the last time I checked the other day, the 2021 accepted legislative budget, our actual budget, when I clicked on it, was still the executive budget. So once again, we get promises about transparency and a goal-oriented budget that we've seen in other areas. We haven't seen it here, and we continue to add all these positions inside finance and budget, and we don't always get what we're promised. So I think it's time to start demanding to get what we're promised. So I hope there's a willingness to at least go back down to what I think is a more appropriate salary. It's 100% taxpayer funded.
Any other comments?
I'm willing to have that discussion, but I don't think that I can have it tonight, because to do something like that when the person's already been hired for the position, you'd have to also know what he was making at his previous position, because if we're going to lower it to what he was making before his previous position, you know, he'd probably go back to the other position. I think that there's factors there that when you hire somebody, which again, you know, this executive has been very good at that. At getting the legislature to not do things based on, you know, hire dates and whatnot. So I'm not saying that is a good thing. I'm just saying that as a fact of life.
All those in favor? Opposed? I believe everybody's opposed. All right. Motion defeated. Thank you. John, are you ready at all or no? Yeah. All right. Yes. Well, now's a good break. So let's.
Thank you.
Yeah. If we want to go through. It's. Can I have a motion for resolution 95? That is the.
So moved.
Second.
Dr. Smith, are you ready?
Just let me get a second.
Sorry.
Legislator Walter or Legislator Cahill. Thank you. A second. Okay. Thank you.
Are you ready for me?
Yes.
Okay. The reason why we're requesting this change to the budget was that essentially the vacancy in essential staff didn't occur until January 3rd, when our chief medical examiner, Dr. Heller, retired. This left two deputy medical examiners and our deputy for medical legal investigations, Haley Carr, in the positions that they currently, that they had prior to Dr. Heller's retirement, with less staff to do what is obligated under New York State County law for the county to provide medical examiner services on a 24/7, 365-day basis. Because of that extensive round-the-clock obligation to respond to medical examiner calls that are placed to the department or to the division by law enforcement whenever they come upon the scene of a decedent who meets the criteria basically to be covered under medical examiner or coroner services. Our county has been a medical examiner type county since 1970 or thereabouts. Prior to that, there was a coroner. The medical examiner's division and the functions of a medical examiner are defined under New York State County law. And basically the requirement is to take quote unquote possession of a body that has represents a decedent who succumbed to either homicide, suicide, in recent years, overdoses, fatal motor vehicle accidents, crib death type cases. And because the numbers of these cases over time, over at least the past 10 years, have increased in all of those categories, the work of the medical examiner division has intensified and increased, but the 24/7, 365-day obligation for coverage has always been the case. So that has not changed. So when the chief medical examiner, with very little advance notice, basically retired January 3rd, that meant that the budget had already been processed, so to speak. And now we're left with an urgent deficit in the staff that's needed to fulfill this obligation. And we are therefore, you know, having to come before you to ask for, under this resolution, for an amendment to the budget. Certainly, if we had known when the budget was being developed or was being approved by the county exec's office and or being approved by the legislative group that you represent, we would have had it secured in that budget context. But given the fact that it was a late notice and now we're left with the need to make this, you know, to make sure that we provide for this coverage, we are now in this position. When we considered the possibilities of how we would fill the chief medical examiner role, we did reach out to the medical community. Unfortunately, given the fact that there is overnight and weekend coverage responsibilities, no one was interested in providing that, at least not for the kind of compensation we could offer. But the taking a serious look at how the work basically is covered, with the medical legal death scene investigator, Haley Carr, being our only full-time staff member. The other two right now still are working on a less than full-time basis. But, you know, she covers Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. She does all of the administrative work that goes along with management of this division, including dealing with funeral directors, families, law enforcement, district attorney if it's a potential homicide case. So there's quite a bit of responsibility that goes along with also answering the call to go to the scene of a decedent and then to take the her measurements, as it were, of the scene and bring them back to the forensic pathologist, Dr. Katniss, who actually does the autopsies on behalf of the county through a contract with Westchester Medical Center, which is a separate, entirely separate provision right now. And that's for a topic for another day. But The medical examiner is defined under public county law. It's defined under the Ulster County Charter. And, you know, we are in a position where we think that hiring a second death scene investigator, medical legal investigator who is not a physician, would be the best option, both from a financial standpoint and from a work responsibility standpoint. And that's why we're asking you to approve this resolution, which will allow us to hire a second medical legal investigator, which would in fact assist with the overnight and weekend and daily routine activities and provide the kind of support that the division needs. Haley is a graduate, the current individual who serves in this function. She's a graduate of the Forensic Institute at Syracuse University. She's very well academically trained. And she came to us really basically able to hit the ground running when she came to us about a year ago. We reached out to her director of that division at Syracuse University, Dr. Sponsler, who agreed to basically put the call out to see if there's another graduate who is interested. And we did get a couple of individuals, candidates, who came forward on the basis of his request and basically have his recommendation, which is extremely helpful to get the division academically to a point where it literally satisfies the degree of need that or the qualifications that would be required of the division anywhere in New York State or elsewhere. So hence, that's where we are at this present time, and I am happy to answer any questions that you may have. I guess I will turn it over to Joanna at this point, and then she can take it from there, and or Haley Carr, who is with us this evening as part of this call. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Secretary Patrice, do you want to?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, thank you, Dr. Smith. I just wanted to add some detail about what the chief medical examiner was covering. So he was actually taking on two nights a week and two weekends a month, which is on average 60 hours a week. Some weeks it was 90 hours a week. So I think Haley was about to chime in there. And so that's why we're kind of in this position where in January, the rest of the team really did a great job in terms of stepping up and taking on these additional shifts among themselves, but it's really getting to a point where they're overly stretched and we're hearing that we're not able to get to the death scenes on time to conduct the investigations. So that is part of the urgency as well.
Legislator Ronk.
Thank you. I want to fully understand what's going on here. So currently we have one full-time deputy medical examiner, two part-time deputy medical examiners, and a chief medical examiner.
The chief?
I understand the chief retired. I'm talking about the position, Dr. Smith. There is a position and budgeted for a chief medical examiner. Thank you. We haven't hired for the chief medical examiner yet. Correct?
Correct, but we've posted for it and we haven't gotten any applicants.
Understand.
Yeah.
I assume that you'll cast a wider net at some point, perhaps also inside the department, but, as part of the job description for chief medical examiner, is there a requirement for on-call hours for nights and weekends?
Yes.
What is the requirement in the posting for a number of hours, nights and weekends? Because the 60 to 90 hours that I heard from Joanna, are those on-call hours or actual hours that on the job?
On-call hours are actual hours on the job. If you ask an individual, medical examiner has to have a medical degree, MD. When you ask a doctor to carry a beeper for 8 hours, that doctor expects to get paid for 8 hours of his.
Oh, I understand.
Right.
So I was just asking, for my own edification, Dr. Smith. It's a fair question.
Oh, it's a fair question. It's a very honest answer. So if you're, excuse me, I have a bit of a respiratory thing going on. It's not COVID, I hope. in any case, yes, if you're asking them to cover a weekend from 5 p.m. on Friday to 9 a.m. on Monday, all of those 60 some odd hours, they would expect to get paid for every one of those hours. Whether or not that beeper went off, or that cell phone went off, whether or not they had to answer the phone and deal with the case over the phone, or whether or not the case demanded that they go to the scene of the death. And that scene of the death could be anywhere. We've had folks that have slipped off the slopes in the Shawangunks. We recently just had this weekend, we had a vehicle death in which the snowmobile flipped over. The individual had no helmet and crushed his skull. That death scene investigator has to go to that scene, gather as much evidence that they can, as does law enforcement as well. But remember, law enforcement's primary responsibility is for criminal activity. Medical examiner activity is not only to assess the scene after the police have done their due diligence with respect to a potential homicide, but if it's a suicide or a fatal motor vehicle accident of some kind, literally the medical examiner also needs to collect some evidence on that case and decides, yes, this case does meet the criteria and should be brought in for an autopsy by the forensic medical examiner. Some cases where the police are called to a scene at a home, it may have been an elderly individual who has a private doctor. The doctor is contacted by the medical examiner. The case is discussed. The medical history of the decedent is discussed, and it is decided between the medical examiner and that attending physician. Does this case need an autopsy? In that particular case, person may have been elderly, et cetera, the answer may be no, because there's no obvious criminal or foul play, and this individual's come to a medical event. So, you know, whether or not you're actually going to a scene or discussing the case with an attending physician or dealing with the funeral directors who then bring the decedent either to the morgue or to a funeral business for further processing, et cetera, that medical examiner has to do that work, whether it's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, or 9 o'clock or 12 o'clock noon. I mean, death knows no time, right? So this work has to be done. So, with the thing is, when you speak to a physician, they may or may not be willing to do overnight coverage like that, weekend coverage, and their cost is quite appropriate to their degree, let's put it that way, that they are expecting money for compensation that we may not necessarily think we can handle with respect to the budget for the county at this point in time. So, nevertheless, the quality of what Haley has done as medical legal investigator, she's not a physician, but she is a graduate trained forensic examiner, has been excellent, and we feel as though having someone who has graduated with similar reviews, to join the division will help to offset the responsibility of night and weekend coverage as well as some of the daytime activity that goes along with it. Joanna?
Investigator Nolan and Walter.
I'm sorry. I was deferring to Joanna because she deferred back to me. I'm sorry.
Yes,
thank you. I would just say that the other part of this that hasn't yet been brought out here is how much the workload in this area has increased. The number of cases that are coming to the medical examiner's office has gone up dramatically, and there's reasons to expect that it will continue to be high. That's not just COVID, that the substance use and overdose deaths have increased. So there's quite a bit of increase. And I think that this approach to solving the immediate problem is really makes a lot of sense. and it may help us see what that division needs over time. We might want to look at some of the things that are now requirements in that department, whether they need to remain. At one point, this legislature made the requirement that the physician filling the medical examiner's position be a resident of Ulster County. I'm not sure that's reasonable anymore, and I think it's worth looking at. But we have to fill this position now because of our legal requirements and because these people who have stepped up for the past month and a half have to have some assistance. And this is a very reasonable, cost-effective way to provide it to them. So I think we ought to do this and then look at the other questions that we have that were raised by the way this this came to us.
Legislator Walker.
Thanks. So for me, I'm supportive of this at this point. The challenges this office is having is expanding beyond this office. It impacts law enforcement. It impacts our community members who are having long waits to find out, you know, to have resolve on some of these cases. They're very connected with our Oracle program and our other opioid net team. And so it's not just, I agree with everything that Legislator Nolan said, but add on to that the implications of this, of the pressure that this department is experiencing is impacting other departments and community members. And so I feel that it wouldn't have been asked for if it wasn't as needed as they're describing. And I feel very compelled that it is.
Thank you, Deputy Zager, the Chair.
Yes, I just wanted to add quickly, because I know I think Haley wants to add something, but to Legislator Ronk's point about the position being posted and casting a wider net, I want to echo Legislator Nolan that it does have to be an Ulster County resident, and it's been up for a while, and we have approached people internally as well. We have had a little bit of interest, but only in like one person is interested in taking on the role only with the higher level administrative duties that are required of that position, which Haley can talk about a little bit more. But at the salary that it's currently budgeted for, it's just not competitive, unfortunately. And so that's why we're trying to put forth this lower cost option to cover those hours.
Ms. Carp, go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for, you know, being here tonight and being willing to even discuss this late resolution. Sitting in on this conversation for a while now, I definitely heard some talk about introducing items into the budget outside of those negotiations. And I recognize that this is a unique situation that is typically not something that we would want to be discussing at this point prior to budget negotiations. I would like to reiterate that what was previously mentioned, we would never have brought this to the table if it was not an urgent situation that we were in. To put into some perspective, we have had 4 employees in this office since my understanding is 2019, which means that 24/7 on-call schedule was split between 4 individuals up until last month when Dr. Heller retired. Since his departure, myself and my fellow 2 deputies have been splitting his 96-hour per week coverage. That is 2 overnight shifts, each are 16 hours, and 1 weekend shift, which is 64. So it is an incredible amount of time. Everyone has taken on a lot more than they typically do, including Dr. Stutt, who is our acting ME. He is certainly covering the majority of the schedule at the moment, but the 3 of us, unfortunately, are not going to be able to continue at this pace. Day to day, looking at our influx of calls might not seem like a lot, but being on call requires that we're available to leave at a moment's notice. For me, that means I don't go to the gym because I don't want to go to a scene and be interacting with grieving families covered in sweat. That means that I'm not cooking complicated dinners at home because I can't have something in the oven and have to be called out to, let's just say,
rehearsing in the middle of the night to answer a call for a gentleman who flipped on his ATV. These are just, you know, things that most people don't take into consideration when they consider on-call duties. And not to mention, for myself personally, I'm handling all of the administrative duties during 9-to-5 business hours every day, and taking on overnight shifts definitely adds to my workload, seeing as I am already addressing 24/7 concerns for the office, not including any death calls that come in overnight and the death calls that I respond to during the day. So again, I'd be happy to answer any questions you guys have regarding what we do every day in the office and any questions regarding the on-call schedule. And I sincerely hope you guys will all take this into consideration. Again, this is an urgent resolution that we've put forward. Thank you.
Legislator Rock.
Thanks. I don't respect the use of the word most people when you talk about not understanding on-call services. You know, both Legislator Guevaras and myself are both, members of EMS service. So we fully recognize that having this on means that you're on call and that you can't cook complicated dinners and can't go out with your friends. So I totally respect that. We do that for free. But I totally respect the on-call nature. I fully grasp the on-call nature. Right now I'm doing 3-to-5 crew nights a week. I've never contemplated the hours, but maybe I'll start doing that. I don't like the use of like words like most when you're talking about people's understanding of things.
Gets me to second deputy executive Terris. I'm going to be asking for a motion to survey notes to postpone this to next week. I did request some information. Unfortunately, I didn't get it until just prior to the meeting, so I have not had an opportunity to review it. So I'm going to ask for that, but Deputy Secretary, if you want to go right ahead.
Yes, sorry about that. It took us a few hours to track that information down, but you did receive it?
Before the meeting, I got it. But yes, I got it.
Got it. Okay. I just wanted to add quickly that as it is the current coverage as it stands, and with Haley being the only full-time person in that office, she also is not able to just take regular time off. And whenever there is an emergency, sort of has to rally to get to that and to provide that coverage. The other deputy MEs we have other obligations in terms of their practices. And so they're not always able to kind of come at a moment's notice and fill in. And so really any sort of flexibility or any additional hours really falls on Haley. And she hasn't been able to take just regular days off. Just wanted to add that for the record.
Are there any other comments from the legislators? No, all right. Haley, if you want to go ahead. You're on mute.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond to Legislator Ronk's comments. Of course, in no way was I indicating that there are members in this meeting who are not familiar with the on-call process. Having friends who are EMS myself, I am very well aware of what that means for all of you as well. I probably was referring mostly to other folks that we've had this conversation with, definitely not characteristic of the folks in this meeting, but I appreciate your comments. And I just would like to reiterate that this is a position of passion. People don't go into forensics for money, fame, et cetera. We're here because we love this work and we want to help people. But at some point, we have to start thinking about our own health and our own safety, and we have to take that into consideration. So that is part of the reason why we are proposing this resolution. And again, that was meant not in any way to be disrespectful to you or anyone else who works in emergency services.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Guevaras. So you're going to request a postponement for 1 week, so it will still be on this month's agenda, and it won't delay the actual passing of this resolution if you have an opportunity to look at the information you were given today, correct?
Correct. That's my goal, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Can I have some motion for that?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Dr. Smith and Haley. I appreciate that. Anything else? Next week we'll be talking about it again. All right, let's turn to the agenda. resolution number 28, dedicating funding to implement the respite house policy. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second.
Second.
Second round. Discussion. Mr. Walter.
While I, of course, fully support this resolution in every way, shape, or form, I would say that for this one, number 29, 30, and 31, and 32, I don't know how you feel about blocking it to make a motion to postpone so that we can allow the ARP committee to meet, and then we can regroup on this after they've had that chance.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
I'll second it.
Second.
All there. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
I'm opposed.
Opposed to blocking?
Yes, I'm opposed to blocking because I want to talk about one of them independently tonight, possible.
Which one, Legislator Kayla? I'd be happy to take that out of the block.
It's the Enterprise. I'm sorry, not the Enterprise. It's the UC to one.
Number 32?
32, yes. Yep.
All right. Legislator Walter, are you comfortable removing 32 so Legislator Cahill can talk about it?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. So all those in favor?
Aye. Without 32? Aye.
Without 32. Okay.
So I make a motion to postpone 28,
29, 30, 31. I'll second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Okay. So resolution 32. Can I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Second. Walter, discussion? Let's hear Cahill.
Yeah, so I just wanted to bring this up. You know, we had a little bit of a, discussion about that in our committee and a couple of other committees prior to this. And, this particular program that the USEDA and the Department of Economic Development are putting forward is really a county-sponsored extension of a program that's already in place. I just came from a USEDA board meeting prior to this committee meeting this evening. And, there are some success stories there. There are some notes from people who received that first round of CARES grants that said that the money literally saved their business. One person said it saved their life. I know that's dramatic, and I don't mean to, say that us funding that with, ARP money is, saving people's lives. I don't believe that, but I do believe that is certainly enhancing the ability of some of these businesses to withstand this over and over and over long-term downturn in business with where there are people involved, because people aren't going out. They're not going to stores. They're not doing the same things as they did. And that's the bulk of these folks who are being, helped with these funds. So, I'd really like to see, this, the county pitch in the $1 million into the extension, what we call in USEDA CARES 2, which is actually not CARES, but county funded ARP program, but with the same background and the same criteria. I'm gonna support pushing that forward today. I would have supported it in our committee, but we got overruled there.
That's your rock.
Thanks. I think that part of my apprehension with moving forward on this now is that, every business could use this assistance. And this isn't enough money, nor was CARES, nor I don't know that you could come up with enough money to give this amount of money to every business. So at some point, we're picking winners and losers. And at some point, a business that knows about the program and is going to apply for it, when a business, say, in the Hamlet of Walkill doesn't know about it and then won't, have the opportunity to apply for it, or maybe won't as fast. Somebody who's got the ear of a legislator or knows somebody in the economic development, community in and around the city of Kingston is more likely to be applying for this than a business that's outside of that sphere of influence. And that's one of my concerns about using $1 million in this manner, is that, you are picking winners and losers, because I would be willing to bet you that every single business in Ulster County could meet the criterion under the program of need of enhancing their operations. I just, again, that's where my apprehension comes in, and I that's why I can't support it tonight. I'd be happy to have it postponed, but I can't support it tonight.
Let's say Walter, then Melanie, then Kate.
Thanks. And just to be clear, I mean, this ties into resolution number 29, which we are postponing. But yeah, I feel like this postponement could be very valuable. There is information that we are waiting to see. For me, myself, it's really a better understanding of who's already being funded and who is basically on the slate to be funded at this point. I agree with Legislator Ronk. I'm concerned about how, despite the fact that, and I looked very carefully at the backup provided by Chris Kelly recently on the details of how the decision is made, it still ultimately becomes a first come, first serve. And I don't feel like it fits into like defining a policy of who we want to make sure we're supporting. Are we considering geographic need? Are we considering race? Are we considering, you know, how are we putting our policies behind assuring that certain types of businesses have that opportunity to be protected in our county? And so, you know, the concept of supporting small business, I'm absolutely supportive, but I think that the process that's put forth in front of us, I think needs some tweaking. And I don't know if the executive's office is open to adapting this model of how we identify who we should be prioritizing for supporting them, which businesses. But I think if they are, we could probably get a lot farther on this. At this point, we're kind of, I feel like being told this is how we're doing it, and that's the only option on the table. And, you know, I think if they're open for a real discussion so that we assure, for example, that our main streets that have, you know, large percentage of people of color are seeing representation of themselves on their main street, or, you know, community businesses that are really fitting certain types of needs or are an underrepresented group in another way are really getting the support they need. You know, there's ways we can put policy behind this decision, and I don't necessarily feel it's fully baked yet. And so I would prefer to postpone it, and I would hope that the executive's office would be open to really exploring how do we identify on a needs-based level, how do we really identify which of these businesses should get the money? Because as, again, as Legislator Ronk said, there'll be many who won't get it. And how do we make the smartest decision?
Thank you. All right. Before we go to anybody else, is there any other Ways and Means Committee members who have any comments? Okay. If not, I would also support Legislator Ronk in postponing this. ARPA has not, it will be meeting tomorrow to discuss this. So it really hasn't gone through their committee with approval yet. So I think if you're willing to, Legislator Ronk, in order to save time tonight, I think we're going to talk about this next week. So if there's votes to postpone it, I'd like to have a motion to postpone.
I'll make that motion.
Second, Mr. Walter. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. All opposed? Okay, so carried. Thank you. All right, we'll take it up next.
Legislator Cahill's opposed, if you just make
you're sure
opposed? As such.
Thank you, Mr. Cahill. All right, Resolution 33, amending capital project 577, the McKinney Street Bridge. Can we have a motion? Somebody, Mr. Walter, second?
Second.
Ronk, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So carried. 35, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $199,434.10.
I'll move it.
10.
Second.
I'll second it.
Okay, all those in,
discussion?
All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? So carried. 36, approving the execution of a contract for
$2,434,400.
Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Second. Walter, discussion? Deputy Secretary Ryder?
Yeah, I'm just going to ask for a motion to postpone this one for 1 week. There's a couple questions I need answered, and then I'll get back to you all.
I'll make a motion. We postpone it.
Second.
I'll second it.
Fabiano. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Thank you. Number 37, establishing capital project 619 and 620.
Large COVID
program. Second. Mr. Walter, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Resolution 39, authorizing the chair of the legislature to amend an agreement with the New York State Unified Court System. Could I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Mr. Walter, second round. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Number 40, amending the 2022-2027 capital.
Make a motion. We block 40 and 42 together.
Motion second. Mr. Walter, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right.
I make a motion. We block 44, 45, 46.
I voted yes on the block.
Oh,
I wanted
sorry.
To see something about resolution.
My fault. I was just looking at the list. I wasn't looking at the screen.
Oh, he is home. Sorry. I have something on 40.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, we're trying to green our vehicles. I appreciate a lot how many are on this that are electric or hybrid. Just checking, and maybe I don't know if anyone's here, if this conversation came up in Public Works, but for the Ford 250, which is buildings and grounds, there are hybrids. Is there a reason why you didn't go with a hybrid for that one?
You're saying there's hybrid heavy duty trucks?
Yeah, well, according to Google.
I mean,
but it didn't. I'm just saying, asking, because also I don't know. I understand, like with the sheriff's vehicles, there's difference with mileage, how much wear and tear. But I looked up the equivalent of a Ford F-250 specifically to see whether there was. And, you know, I get with boom lifts and scissor lifts, you're not going to. I only looked for that one because it is a pickup truck. And there is a hybrid specific, a Ford F-250 hybrid. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because of the power, et cetera, needed. But I can double check with our Public Works Department. I also know that a lot of the EV and hybrid vehicles have a really long turnaround time right now. And I think that this vehicle is necessary. Legislator Fabiano might know with experience in the town highway department as well, whether a hybrid would be useful here.
Absolutely not. They don't match up. It takes power away from the vehicle. When you get in your winter months, when you need those vehicles for plowing and sanding, you need that extra power and strength, and you just don't get it out of hybrid. Hybrid, all I see in highway work and stuff is for transportation vehicles, management people into offices to get from point A to point B. But actually on a job site or out on roads, they simply don't cut the mustard. Do you even find that a lot now with the computers in these vehicles and heavy equipment? It's just not the same. It's not the same.
Thank you.
But I don't have anything against like the hybrid, you know, like I said, transportation vehicles for office management and this and that. But for actual construction work, in my experience of 42 years, I'm not happy with them.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So carried. You wanted to block the next ones, Legislator Monk?
Yes. let me get back to it. I was going to make a motion to block 44, 45, 46, 47, 48.
Through 51, Ken.
I'm fine with through 51. There have been historically questions about Seneca pavement marking. So
I have questions for 44. I mean, I could ask them within the block, but I have questions.
Okay. So then through 51.
Thank you. Let's say Walter. All right, discussion. Let's say Walter.
Yeah, I'm just in terms of 44. You know, I appreciate the soil analysis for slope stabilization. I had reached out to Amanda at the end of last year. I'm particularly concerned about what we are doing in terms of assessing and dealing with slope stabilization when it's not necessarily a county building. You know, that we have, there is some mention of farms, but not necessarily protection of farms for flooding. Well, I guess that's actually another resolution, but that, you know, we have, I was so impacted by this family in Bronx who died in the last big storm that they had in New York City. And, you know, I don't think it's enough that we work on just managing the soil, stabilizing the soil when it's a waterway or an area that it's ours. I think that we need to have some responsibility for the impact that flooding can make on our community members. And I'm not against this particular resolution, but I'm really hoping that we could take that step further, assuming there was going to be more climate crises. Like, we can guarantee we're going to have heavy rains. We're going to guarantee we're going to have excessive flooding. And so what can we do to really assess and stabilize our boundaries so that we can protect our community members is something I really want to have seriously discussed.
All right, all those in favor of blocking? Opposed? So carried? All right. On the block, all those in favor? Block resolution?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, so carried. Resolution 52, approving the execution of a contract amendment for 10,000, or 10 million, sorry. Nope, 10,000. So I'm drawing my thing here. For Pestmaster Services, can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. I'll second it.
Walter, discussion?
I just have a quick question. Does anyone know where they put all of these carcasses?
I mean, so in our bids, they have to dispose of them in a facility that's certified to take them, and there's a couple, I believe, in the county that that they're able to take them to. They have to be certified in order to accept these carcasses. I don't know the exact locations. I just know they have to be certified locations.
Legislative T, you had your hand up or no?
I did. I had a question on this one because it did come up in Public Works. Is this 10,000 due to the living wage increase, or is this just additional services for roadkill? And I do believe they take some of them to Highland. They have the county site there where they compost them.
This is an extension of services. This is not this doesn't have anything to do with the living wage. Again, this is one of those resolutions that you see where it says that we're adding that paragraph, but the increase in rates has nothing, or it's not an increase in rates, just adding money to the contract at the same rate.
All right, all those in favor? Opposed? So carried. All right. 53, we already did. 55, amending capital project 482 for the countywide radio system. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Discussion? All those, let's say one. Walter?
Just a clarification. I know there were a bunch of purchases that they were able to use right away and a bunch that they have to store until they move to their new location. Does this fall under A or B?
I believe this falls under A. We have not made those purchases under B yet.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
So carried. 57, establishing capital project 621 voting system replacement. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second, Fabiano. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 59, authorizing execution of a contract with New York State Department of Transportation. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second, Walter. Discussion? Walter?
Thank you. I recognize this is a grant, a Metro grant, so it's supposed to be really, it's very Kingston-centric. But is there, I was reading it carefully, trying to understand if it has any extended impact beyond Kingston. I couldn't tell. So does it? Can you explain any, I mean, if it doesn't, because that's what the parameters of the grant are, then I understand that. But will it impact beyond Kingston?
I don't have that answer. If you want to postpone it for a week, I can get that from Bennett.
Well, Legislator Nolan has her hand up.
Yeah, I'm attended quite a bit of the Transportation Council meeting, so I feel like I know the answer to this, that the this is for the entire Transportation Council, and that has representations from all across Ulster County on that board. And I think it actually extends to the regional level with Orange and Dutchess County included in it as well. But if you want to have somebody, you know, with authoritative information speak to it, you know, postponing it won't hurt. But I think it's quite clear that it has impacts beyond Kingston.
I don't need to postpone it. I mean, if it's it's flow through money, it's a grant. So, you know, if that's who it helps only, that's who it helps only. I wouldn't expect it to do more than it's supposed to. I just would love to, I would like to know if it's helping beyond Kingston, just to know the impact that we can look forward to. But so, Deputy Executive Ryder, if you could just let me know, it would be useful. But, you know, I understand it's grant money and it has its own parameters.
Sorry, and I just looked at, I wasn't caught up. So this is funding all of our transportation studies over a set period of time. I believe that does have further reach than Kingston. As Legislator Nolan said, this they work through the entire Transportation Council, which includes all the supervisors. They have to decide unanimously on projects, and they determine where to do the traffic studies. I think probably many of them are in Kingston, but I can get you other projects that have either will be done on this contract or have been done in the past off of these funds.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, so carried. Resolution 61, authorizing the submittal of grant application funding for Department of Agriculture. Can I have a motion? Walter, second. Legislator Cahill, discussion? Legislator Walter?
Yeah, just, I mean, I know Deputy Executive Ryder and I could talk offline, but this is also what calls my attention, because while we're supporting the farms in terms of like their industry, we're not thinking about in terms of climate impact. And so this is an area to particularly look at it, because if their farmland is completely washed out, they have no industry.
Sorry, I didn't see your hand if you raised or not. Opposed? So carried. 62, authorizing execution of a contract with New York State Housing Trust Fund Corp. Have a motion?
So can we block 62 and 63? Right? Isn't 63 the funding for 62? And then I'm going to make a motion to postpone this as well. It wasn't obvious. It took a lot of reading, but I realized this ARP as well. It doesn't say it until like the last page, but 500,000 of this 800,000 is ARP. So it's not even in front of the ARP committee. So I'm not sure how you want to handle that part, but they need to look at this before we do. So this might be a bigger postponement. Let me say one more thing. I'm sorry, before you go, Deputy Executive Ryder. Now, if you wanted to amend it and find the you know, for the 500,000 to come from somewhere else, and then have a later resolution requesting that the funding come from ARP. You know, I don't want to hold up the grant. I appreciate what they're doing, all of that. I just, in terms of protocol, ARP hasn't gotten a chance to have this, and it's just not how we're doing it now. So I will just correct that if you want to amend it in any way, that it is not ARP coming up with the $500,000. And we could postpone it just for our next Ways and Means. You won't have to wait, because again, I know the resolution is not in front of ARP at all. It's your fault, not ours, but it isn't.
Debbie Saker, Brian.
So I did confirm with Dennis, who reached out to the state, that while it was in the application, that there would be additional services provided by Ulster County in the form of $500,000, and that we had planned on that being ARP funding. That this grant does not, it's not a match. So we are not required to spend those ARP funds for this purpose. There is no ARP funding or contract in front of you for this month. This grant we can accept and we can spend, even if the county decides not to spend the additional $500,000. It was more aspirational. I will say that they have already reached out, and I don't have a problem with it being, postponed for a week. That's fine. But they have already reached out to us and said, we gave you this grant in January. You had 45 days to return it because it wasn't taken up in the January meeting, which was an organizational meeting. We haven't been able to sign the contract. We will likely lose this grant if we delay approval of the grant until March. I do realize that this was done a little bit backwards, and really it should have been brought to the ARP committee at the same time, even though we're not ready for an ARP allocation or a contract at all.
Let's say, Walter, you want to make a formal motion for blocking them, and then so we could talk about it.
To postpone it till next Ways and Means.
You wanted to do the block first, so you wanted to block the two.
Oh, okay, right. Sorry, we'll vote on the block.
I'll tell you what your motion was, to block 62 and 63, correct?
Yes.
Can I have a second for that? Legislator Cahill. All right. Any more discussion for the block purposes? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so carry. Now,
so I make a motion to postpone this just till next week and give Deputy Executive Ryder the chance to make an amendment, just remove the 500 from now so that we can go through with accepting the grant, and then you can put in a resolution to ARP for the 500 if you're all still feeling like you want to.
Deputy Executive Ryder, is that the plan?
I mean, the local share, which I'm not even sure if it reads ARP, but the Schedule B 2021 awarded budget and project accomplishments is not a document that I can amend. That's from the state. This is a state I don't have the ability to amend the backup that's associated with this resolution.
But can you amend? I mean, so if you took out the 500 and just put in the request, is the grant for 300?
No, the grant's for 800,000. That CDBG funding, we are receiving 800,000 regardless of whether we spend the 500,000.
Okay, so then the only change, so you don't need the ARP money to get to the 800.
No, it's the projected total funding, 1,300,000. That includes the local 500. Is there someplace that I'm missing?
On the resolution itself is the language that you could change.
I didn't see resolution. That...
I mean, and the resolution itself, it says 800,000.
Right. That's not what this resolution is for. It's not for the ARP fund.
I see. Let me just see.
Legislator Walter, maybe as an interim step, why don't we refer to the ARPA committee, who then could refer it back to us for next meeting.
We could, although with Deputy Executive Ryder, if he's saying that this nothing on here is, well, I'll leave it to Deputy Executive Ryder. Do you want them to consider, do you want to, us to refer it to them for them to consider that residual?
Can we postpone this and I can raise it to the ARPA? I mean.
Well, you're sure there's no ARPA, you're sure there's no contractual requirement for us to use ARPA money if we approve this in the, tonight?
To, we confirm that. We confirm that today with the funder.
All right. Then I guess postponing is fine too. Okay.
Okay. I'll make that motion.
All right. Second, Legislator Cahill.
Well, actually, I had a question before we did that, but that's okay.
We got a second discussion, so let's okay. Second that. All right, discussion, Legislator Cahill.
Yeah. So my question is this: so, if we're concerned about losing the grant based on the calendar. Why don't we just remove the $500,000 from this resolution entirely and then submit an additional $500,000 in relation to this resolution to the ARP committee and take it from there? I mean, I don't want to lose that $800,000 grant to the county because there's an additional $500,000 being tagged in, right? Doesn't make any sense.
Deputy Executive Ryder and Walter.
Again, the only thing the only thing that really refers to the 500,000 is the Schedule B 2021 awarded budget and projected accomplishments that says local 500,000. That is a document that I am not comfortable changing because it is a document that was created by the state. That's the only place I've found 500,000.
Is it a requirement or not? I mean, I'm confused now because previously, Deputy Ryder, you said that it wasn't a requirement that we have any match with it at all and that we were in trouble of losing the grant because of the date. And we have 45 days from January 1st, right? So is that $500,000 in the backup that the state provided required or not? I'm confused. I'm not getting a clear answer here.
I think it's best for us to postpone and get those answers between now and then. All right. All those in favor of postponement until next week?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Thank you. Okay. 65. Authorizing the chair legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with Towns of Soares and Village of Ellenville. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. Fabiano, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 66, amending the 22 budget to accept allocation for adult protective services funds. Can I have a motion? Walter, just a second. Mr. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 67, amending the 22 budget to accept additional allocation funds from New York State Office of Children and Family. Can I have a motion? Legislator Walter, second. I have a second.
Second.
Second, Fabiano. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. 68, authorizing the legislature to enter a municipal agreement with preschool special education. Can I have a motion? Legislator Walter, second. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 69. There are some outstanding questions to this. Can I have a motion to postpone this? Legislator Cahill. Walter, your second?
Second.
Discussion on that? No. All right, all those in favor? Opposed? So carried. Thank you. 70. Approving the execution of a contract for 67.5 Youth Advocate Programs. Have a motion? Legislator Walter, second. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 71, approving next use of contract amendment for 67.5 for youth programs. Motion, Walter, second. Second. Fabiano, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? You're opposed?
Oh, no. I'm in favor. I'm just slow to the...
Thank you.
Plug of the holster.
72, approving execution of a contract for 90,000 youth advocate program. Can I have a motion? Walter, second. Cahill, discussion? Walter?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Johanna, for not bringing this up earlier. It sometimes takes me a while to, like, process things. But the increase from 70 to 71 and to 70 to 73 of from 67.5 to 90,000, you know, so for the current ones, they're 90,000, right? The previous ones were 67,500. Is any of that impacted by the new law of increasing salaries to $15 an hour? I was trying to figure out, because the number of people served remained exactly the same, I was trying to see, like, what led to an increase of the 15,000, or, well, whatever it is.
The number of kids served goes up by 5.
Okay, it didn't.
From 15 to 20.
Okay, when I looked at the comparison, I got the same number, but maybe I was looking at the wrong backup. So you're saying it increases for both of them, the number of kids served?
Correct.
Yes. Okay, good. Thank you. And so just to clarify, the $15 an hour change has nothing to do with this. No, Mark?
I don't believe so.
Okay, just wanted to, because anytime it does come up, we're going to have to look at it. So I just wanted to check. Thanks.
Cheers.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know if it is too late, but I just wanted to clarify the outstanding questions on the Family of Woodstock contract. Were those from last time or were they discussed earlier? Because I just want to make sure to get you what you need for next week.
Yeah, so I really appreciate what you got me. It was the breakdown of the number of people in each of those positions. We just want to be able to make sure that that amount matches the increase amount, that it matches what was in the resolution for the 2022 budget, and also so that we can keep track of how many people are being impacted by this increase. I would say, you know, focusing on those with the 15%, because on what you gave me, several people got raises, but not from below $15 an hour to above. So I'm assuming they're on that spreadsheet, but they're not really the increase to $15 an hour, that's what we're supposed to be covering with the county share and not just all of families' raises. And so we just need a little bit more specificity on that spreadsheet.
Yeah. Understood. Yeah. And to clarify, as I understand it, the way that the budget amendment was introduced last year included not just the living wage increases, but also broader support for helping the organization to stabilize. So I think it was Legislator Cahill earlier who said it was 60,000 for the living wage increase, and then 90,000 is what they requested for increased support more broadly for the three centers. So that tracks with what they've sent in here.
Right. So if you can just, if it tracks, it should be easy to show us how it tracks. It's just giving us the number of people who fall within each of those positions so that we can make sure our numbers match. And also, I mean, and this speaks to the first or one of the earlier resolutions, if there's a desire one day to make a change in other areas of increasing the set base salary, it's just useful for us as legislators to know how many people are we helping with this increase. And so both to reconcile the amounts, but also so that we have a running tally of who are we serving with this $15 increase is something that's useful to the legislature.
Understood. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I apologize. I think we were on 72. Any more discussion on it? All those in favor? Opposed?
Aye.
So carried. Thank you. 73, approving execution of a contract for 90,000 for Youth Advocate Program. Can I have a motion? Walter, second. Second. Legislator Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Aye. So carried. 74, authorizing Chair Legislature to execute a contract with New York State to support COVID-19 vaccination. Can I have a motion?
I'll make a motion for, but I'm abstaining from this one and the next one.
You're abstaining? Fine. Second.
I mean, if you're abstaining, you probably shouldn't make the motion either.
I was trying not to, but nobody else
was. Let's hear Rockabilly make a motion.
Yeah.
Second. Cahill, thank you. All right, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And one abstained. Legislator Walter. Purpose of employment? Legislator Walter? Thank you. Resolution 75.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Right, I was going to say, fine. We're still waiting for some outstanding questions on this as well. So if you don't decline postponing till next week.
I'll make a motion to postpone.
Second.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? One abstention, Legislator Walter. I'm sorry, Dick, is it Ryder? I didn't see
you. Yeah, I just similar question than Deputy Exec Contreras just asked. What are the outstanding questions on 75? Because I was not aware that there were any.
Can we send that to you afterwards in this way? Thank
sure.
you. Okay. 76, approving execution of contract amendment for 14.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second it.
Second. Fabiano, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 77, authorizing Chair Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Office of Addiction and Sports Services. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Walter, discussion? No, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 78, approving the execution of a contract amendment from 46-250. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Walter, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 79, amending 22 budget to create a full-time homemaker aid position. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Walter, second. Discussion? Mr. Rock, you had your hand or not?
No.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So carried. Number 80, approving issues of contract for $150,000 for Kingston Works. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Mr. Walter, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 81, approving a memorandum of agreement between the County of Ulster and the Sheriff's PBA. Can I have a motion?
Moved.
I'm second it.
Second. Fabiano, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So carried. 82, approving the execution of a contract for 521,000 for J&J SAS Electric.
I'll move. I move to block 82 and 83.
Motion second. Walter? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Move the block. Motion. Walter?
Move.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 84, approving the authorizing the Chair of Legislature to execute an agreement with the DRC Division of Homeland Security. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second.
Second.
Second round. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 85, authorized Chair Legislature to execute an agreement with New York State Division of Criminal Justice. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Walter, second round. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 87, authorized Chair Legislature.
I move that we block 87 through 92.
Okay.
No, I want 91 out.
Without 91. Without 91.
Sorry.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. On the block. Motion. Walter?
I'll move.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 91, authorizing the execution of a contract amendment for $230,000 Family Woodstock. Have a motion? Cahill, second. Walter, legislator Cahill.
Yeah, so I'm looking at this, and I brought this up last week. So the previous term, the prior amount was $165,000. This term, it's an additional amount of $230,000, twice as much, for a total of $395,000. So we're amending it to 200% of the original contract. I'm just trying to figure out why.
Nancy Schmidt has her hand up.
Oh, there you go. Go ahead.
Can I speak to this? So when we originally did the RFP for restorative justice services, that was as we were heading into raise the age and the whole programming around that. And Family of Woodstock did win the contract for that. As over the years, we have added additional programming to that. So what started out as just the 180 program for juvenile delinquents, we then added the district attorney's program, Restorative Ulster, and they added staffing to accommodate that. And then we've added now restorative justice in 4 schools. So it has expanded over time. The contract amendments, the way they do it is, you know, it started in 2019 and now it's going through 22. So in the budget for this year is $230,000, and the budget from Family of Woodstock for their staffing is attached to that packet, you know, at the very end.
Discussion?
Yeah, so I'm not quite clear. I'm sorry, Legislator Walter had her hand. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, you can finish. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just still not quite clear, you know, if this is a aggregate increase in services over the course of 3 years, why is it being lumped into one amendment now? I'm not getting that. It should have been probably done more gradually over the course of 3 years as these programs were introduced, you know, and family was taking on more responsibility for these. But it's just, you know, it's a large number to see in one amendment when it's 200% of the original contract without really, you know.
I believe the wording might not be exactly, I'm not sure if it comes down to the wording. I believe we have done an amendment each year. And so the original contract was not for 200 and whatever thousand. I'm not sure if I'm explaining myself right or if the resolution explains it, but the original award was for 2 years with 3 1-year amendments. So I believe this is the second amendment.
Let's say, Kayla, I'm also now as confused as you. I think we should postpone this and try to clarify it.
Thank you.
Make a motion to postpone until next week.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second that.
KL, discussion? Legislator Walter, you want to discuss?
No, I can wait till next week.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. All right, thank you. 90, went up to 92 and 90. Let's go back. Actually, I skipped over one. 86 is authorizing the chair of legislature to execute an agreement with New York State DCJS for a gun violence grant. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
But second, Walter, second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So carried. Thank you. 93, authorize the chair legislature to agreement with the Village of Allenville, New Paltz, Saugerties for real property liens. Can I have a motion? Well,
move.
Bronx, second. Cahill, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 94, approving the issues of contract amendment for 27,556. Have a motion? Legislator Walter, second. Wrong, second. Any discussion? Legislator Walter?
Yeah, so, you know, I look at this contract and this they've had it for a very, very long time. And it increases every single year pretty considerably in that, like in the last 5 years, it's increased by 20%. And it's a lot of money. I'm just wondering, when was the last time this went out for RFP? And, you know, if you can, or maybe Bert can speak to the, it just seems like we're stuck with them and we keep giving them more and more just because they ask. And if you don't have the answer, we could postpone.
Okay, Ryder, go ahead.
But this is the public safety system. The public safety system, I believe we RFP'd when I was the director of purchasing, maybe.
Wait, which system do you think I'm talking about? 14
or 15.
This is the payroll? The payroll.
This is the payroll system.
Sorry. Go ahead, Bert. Yeah. You're on.
Yeah. This is the payroll system, and we went out payroll system in 2000. I'm just trying to think, Legislator Walter. I think it was 2006 in terms of our payroll system.
Okay. And so, I mean, do you want to speak to the fact that basically every year they get to increase the price, even though nothing changes?
I will say the increase in this, too, is to create a self-service portal for employees. So that way I wouldn't have to print out direct deposits. I wouldn't have to print out W-2s. The employees could go and get those electronically and to save printing costs on the out. And that's the biggest part of this contract amendment.
Right, but that just came in. I mean, we discussed that last year.
Yeah.
But still, they again, it's an increase of 20% in just 5 years that every single year they go up quite a bit, even without the extra service. Mm-hmm. It feels irresponsible to just give them what they want because they've asked.
I will say the one thing, it's not just the payroll side, the civil service modules in there too, which we're opening up more modules as part of that to use more of it as we learn more.
Gallagher.
Chairman Guevara, thank you for recognizing me. I wanted to mention to you guys that no new licenses of New World are being sold. And we are going to see a situation where we are going to have to make a change to the financial system sometime in the next 5, maybe 10 years at most. But we are going to see a dilution of services. And in fact, there are modules in our original contract with them, like the grants management module that we pay a fee for that we get no services for right now. So I think with respect to Legislative Walter's point, you know, as this time comes due, we are going to have to be looking, as painful as it is, for whether or not this is the best vendor. And in fact, Tyler has subsequent products that aren't exactly the same that may be the appropriate one. So I just wanted you to know that because I don't think most people are aware of that. Thanks.
Any other discussion? And actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Controller Gallagher, because I wasn't aware of that, obviously. So if this is going to be an end-of-life product, why would we start?
This isn't the financial system. This is the payroll system. They're two different systems.
Okay. Okay. All right. All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. We already did Resolution 95. Controller Gallagher, do you have anything for us?
Yes, I do. Thank you. I know this has been a long night. I just want to take the opportunity to introduce our new Director of Internal Audit and Control, Samuel Sonnenberg. He is joining us now in this job that thank you very much for budgeting this position. It's really important. We've been operating with only 80% of our staff for the last 2 years through the pandemic, but he is a CPA and has come most recently as a lottery game director for New York State Lottery. And he's also worked in an internal audit capacity in New York State Office of Mental Health, New York State Insurance Fund, New York State Department of Civil Service. I think he's going to add a lot to us. We're looking forward to working with him and learning from them. Sam, maybe you want to say hi for a second.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Looking forward to serve you all, serve the community, and
do my best to keep track of things and make sure we're doing things the proper way.
Thank you. You may see him fill in for us here at this meeting in the future. Thanks.
Thank you.
Just as a heads up, resolution number 11, it's going to be postponed to economic development, so that might make its way to either next meeting or the one after. Is there any other business to discuss? If not, ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Mr. Cahill, all those in favor? Opposed? So carried. Thank you all.